Welcome to the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast, where we untangle the past, rewrite the present, and reclaim our future. I am your host, Tammy Vincent, and together we will break free from old patterns, heal wounds, and create new narratives. Are you ready to transform the effects of your dysfunctional past into your superpowers? Are you excited to get back in touch with your true, authentic self? If so, then hit subscribe and join me weekly on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. Here we will learn from experts as well as experienced thrivers how to turn our trials into smiles while living our most authentic and joyful lives. Okay. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Adult Child of Dysfunction. Today we have with us our special guest is Sarah Rollins. She is a licensed clinical social worker and somatic experiencing practitioner. She lives in Michigan and owns a virtual group practice called Embodied Wellness. She specializes in trauma, anxiety, depression, and OCD for adolescents and adults. Sarah specializes in developmental trauma and complex trauma. And in addition to somatic therapy, she also integrates EMDR, IFS, and we'll let her tell you about the internal family systems and an attachment lens in sessions. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. So just tell us a little bit. I mean, it seems like everybody that is in this niche or a social worker or a client, you know, a therapist or whatever it is, got here for a reason. So tell us a little bit about how you got started in this area of expertise.
Yeah. So I stole this from somebody, so I forget who it was. So if someone hears me say this and they're like, I told you that, then I stole it from you. So I apologize. But I heard someone say this and I really resonated. I got my master's at University of Michigan, but I learned to be a social worker in my living room. So, as growing up, my family of origin, I was kind of the therapist of the household. So, that I just grew up and I learned that in my living room, and then I got them my degree later on. So I stole that from someone, but I really resonated with that. So in a nutshell, that's kind of how I came to be here in this.
Well, and that seems to be the standard, which gives you an edge up in your practice in general, because you have lived experience training. And I say sometimes, you know, you can, it's just even the different therapists I went to. I grew up with two alcoholic parents and I would go to therapy and it was great and they helped me, but I'm like, yeah, she doesn't just quite get it. So
right,
you're in a situation where you get it because you lived it. And so even if you were on the other side, so you were like you said, I used to tell everybody I was just everybody's best friend and mentor. And yeah. So I was like, I ought to get some training behind this. But in reality, it was just from what I experienced and what I learned growing up and how I fixed it. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And I also feel like, I don't know if I consider myself an empath fully, but I really feel like from an early age, I can sense what other people feel. I feel what other people feel. And so, I'm really good at reading people's facial expressions, body language, and just sensing that. And so it gives me an edge too in that way. And so all this stuff comes together, especially too with my training. So, you know, I have all those things that gives me that.
Right. And you do a multitude of things, like it said, the EMDR and the IFS and the, I'm sure, you know, like I do the EFT tapping, and there's so many different modalities now. What is your favorite?
Oh, yeah. So that's a hard question, because what I've noticed is that I have to be eclectic. I have to use multiple modalities because no one person is the same, and no one situation, even within a person, is the same. And so one of the phrases they used in my somatic experience training is, we have to look at the nervous system moment to moment, right? Instead of just looking at a person and being like, oh, well, this person wants EMDR. It's like, well, what is best for that person's nervous system moment to moment? And that's going to change it based on maybe how much sleep they've gotten. I mean, like all these factors.
Way too many variables. And I say that there's no ABC, because people say, well, what does a day look like with you and I together if we work together? I'm like, I don't know. It depends on what you need at that moment. It's
Yeah.
exactly right. It could, you know, and I've given people like, okay, well, this week, this is what we're going to work on. Like in your day-to-day life, you're going to write these things down and we're going to be aware of these things. And then they come in and they're dealing with some totally different crisis that had nothing to do with that. We're like, okay, scrap that. Who cares? We'll get back to that next week. And that's the journey. And
Right. You have to follow the nervous system, right? And so that's why I don't plan my sessions. You know, I have knowledge, right? But I have to follow the nervous system, because if I plan to do a boundary exercise, but we're working on grief today, I mean, I can't be like, you know what? Please don't focus on grief. I plan to do a boundary exercise, because that's not in honor of what's right. So,
no, and they're going to leave you still having that dysregulated nervous system from what you didn't deal with that needed to be dealt with right now. So that's, I mean, that just stands to reason. I was just, I guess, wondering more if there was one like that you use for yourself typically that you like better or had or worked for you, or if you n were never really on that side of it, have you always been on the teaching side?
oh no, I've been in therapy since I was 16, so.
Okay.
Yes, no, I would say for me, somatic work, somatic experiencing is kind of the lens in which I see, in which I see the world, right?
Okay,
So,
and I'm going to stop you right there, but just for the people, because some people are going, what is heck is somatic? Because I mean, it makes sense to me. I know what you're saying, but explain a little bit more when you say, like, just explain the big picture of the nervous system and the somatic experiencing.
for sure. Yes, thank you. So somatic experiencing is a type of somatic therapy. And somatic therapy is a broad term for therapies that integrate the body into treatment. And so the way I think about it is, we're not floating heads. We might feel like floating heads. Sometimes I do feel like a floating head. But so everything that has happened in my life, not only has my mind gone through it, but also my body has gone through it. And so if I'm in therapy, or if I'm in coaching, or if I'm in any treatment, and I'm not integrating my body, if I'm not focusing on the sensations, on the urges that I'm experiencing, then I'm really not doing a holistic, integrated approach. So in somatic work, it's not that we're ignoring your thoughts. We're not ignoring your
Yeah.
feelings ever. But we're adding in the body, because your body was there too. And a lot of times the body is where the trauma occurred. Not always.
Right.
But sometimes the body is the place where the trauma occurred. So to actually ignore that and say, you know, we're only going to focus here is such a disservice.
Is.
Yeah.
And I'm super glad that they're really, really, really figuring that out. I mean, that book, The Body Keeps Score, every single person that I ever talk to, I'm like, just read this. It will, even if you just skim through it, you don't need to read much of it. Every paragraph is gold nuggets, and every paragraph for somebody who has ever experienced anything will go, that makes total sense. Because and like you said, it happened, whether it happened to your body or it didn't involve your body directly, it did, because if you didn't deal with it, it got stored in your body. All the emotions, all the stress, all the adrenaline hits, everything stayed in there until you deal with it.
Exactly. And your body was there. Even if it wasn't directly touching your body, you know, your body was there. Your mind wasn't the only piece that was there.
Exactly. So talk about so you were starting to talk about, so talk about some ways that you would, like a new person, how would they know, like, oh, maybe something is stored in my body? Because
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
love, there's some good questions I love. I want to hear yours because
Okay, great. I love talking about this. I'm such a nerd. I'm like, please. Okay. So one of the things that I like to do is always start with, just saying, what do you notice inside your body? And I know it's a really kind of simple question, but getting curious is one of the main things that we do in somatic work. When we're curious, we're not in a trauma response.
Right.
So someone, let me go back a little bit. So someone might say, you know, they'll go on about something that happened that week. Okay. So, you know, I was with my friend, or I was at the grocery store. I mean, it could be benign to really stressful. Okay. And I'll pause them gently, because that's what we do in somatic work. We actually pause people, and my clients really like it. And I'll say, what are you noticing inside, or what are you noticing in their body, your body?
So as they're telling you the story. Yes.
Correct. I don't just start a session and say, what are you noticing inside? Because it's kind right. of like,
right.
you know, there's a context to it.
Right.
And so sometimes people say, I notice nothing. Right. And so that is great information, because nothing is something.
Right.
Yeah. So then I say, okay, thank you for sharing. Like, great. Awesome. Is it okay we get curious about that? Like, where do you notice nothing? Is it your whole body? Is it just one portion? Right? Is it just your arm? Is it just your foot? Right? So we really like kind of dive deep. And is it numbness that's nothing? Right? Like, we kind of break it down a little bit. So, and sometimes it's more blatant. Maybe there's a tingling sensation, but a lot of times, especially at the beginning, people aren't used to noticing sensations.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I mean, I don't know, it's not like you want to trigger them, but sometimes having them say a comment, you know, or just, you know, about the story, like, just tell me one thing about the story. And like you said, then stop, because sometimes they'll be like, oh yeah, I did feel a little bit of a pit in my stomach, or ooh, my lower back kind of tensed up, or my right hip kind of like, oh, that kind of tweaked that, you know? And then, like you said, that's your job, is to get them aware, because then you know how to work with it, yeah, I love that, because some people go, I feel fine, I feel good. And then it's like, okay, say this sentence, and how does that make you feel? And they're like, oh, I don't like that. I'm like, okay. So, yeah. but we don't know what we don't know. If you're not used to being, and that takes practice being that aware.
Yes. And I always say, we're not taught to notice our body sensations. We're taught to notice what thoughts we have. We're taught to notice feelings, right? Everybody knows that kind of feelings chart with the different faces. But when it comes to sensations like tingly, numb, hot, cold, we're not taught that. And so it is a learning curve. And I just validate that, because again, in school, in our society, we're really not taught to go into our bodies. And so there is a tool I give people. It's called the Language of Sensation. And it's actually a resource on my website. So that gives different words you can look at and say, oh, maybe that is what I feel in my body. Because feelings like sad, happy, scared are not the same as sensations in our bodies.
Right. Right. So like you said, it could be numbness, it could be tingling, it could be clenching or tightness or hot, cold. I mean, there's all kinds of different things. And you're right. And children that you're dealing with adolescents and adults who have most likely gone through trauma. And so it's even harder, because they've been taught not even to feel emotion. They've been, you know, even just to understand, I mean, at 26 years old, for someone to say to me, how do you feel? I was like, feel like, that's kind of cool. Like, you're supposed to feel things. So, and it was dealing with all of that, and then it was moved to the body, because yeah, no, that still doesn't feel good, because I still have bleeding ulcers and I have, you know, arthritis and in my jaw from clenching for 20 years. And like, there's all kinds. So it was a whole different, opening a big can of worms, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And the reality is that sometimes the body isn't safe, right? You know, because of what has happened, the body doesn't feel safe, and the body has been violated. And so we want to return to a place where the body feels safe. And so that has to be slow. We're not here to over, override these impulses that have really kept us safe. And so noticing like, hey, you clenched for a reason, right? Like we're not trying to say, you know what, your clenching meant nothing, ignore that and just go
Right.
right in. Like it doesn't feel safe and your body maybe wasn't safe. And now that was then, and this is now, right? So being in the present moment and saying, is our body safe now? Right? Because maybe it wasn't safe then, and we're not trying to negate the past.
Right.
Right? Because a lot of survivors, that's part of their story and why they're so traumatized is because they weren't believed.
Right.
So we're not here to ever do that.
Exactly. So you brought up another thing. I love that you talk about that because some people, when they hear, like I said, they hear the word somatic and they don't know. So like right now you're flipping through Instagram, and if you're like anything like me, you get that 28-day somatic challenge comes up on my feed every single day with the girl doing all the, flips and twisting her stuff, and people are like, what does that even do? And then a couple of people have come to me and said, hey, I keep seeing these somatic challenge things online, and they say, day 16, I finally broke down and cried from the emotion. So, I mean, there's a lot to it, and the people are very curious about it. Maybe one day we'll just come back and have you do some somatic exercises with them. But one of the other things that you wanted to talk about, and I really want to talk about it, is attachment and how people that have like the complex PTSD and the trauma and all of that stuff suffer from these attachment wounds.
So, we all have attachment. I just like to name that. Attachment is not bad. Attachment stems from our early childhood relationships. Sometimes it's our parents or whoever our caregivers were, right? Sometimes our parents, grandparents, it could be siblings, babysitters, whoever. So it morphs over time. And then as adults, we have these attachment styles. And I always say that, I always think it's so funny when people are like, now that I'm 18, I'm an adult. It doesn't just like go away, like
Yes.
because we're 18 and now we're adults, and it's just like this miraculous thing where we turn 18 and it poof, it goes away. So there's insecure attachment, and then within insecure, there's three attachment styles. So there's anxious, there's avoidant, blanked on that one, and then there's a disorganized. And there's a couple different names. Sometimes people call it anxious, preoccupied, or
Right.
but those are like kind of the general names. So I'll break them down. Is that okay?
Yeah, please, because yes. And
Okay.
this is what I had a couple of people, we've been working, a couple of my clients, we're working on different things. And I love to give people a different perspective on it, or see if there's something that I'm saying that they're, or you're saying that I'm not saying, just yes,
Right.
absolutely. Break it down for me, girl.
Yeah. And I love it too because sometimes it's just the way someone says it or the way someone hears it. And, I have clients, I work on that, work with them for years. And then someone says it differently and they come to me and I'm like, yep, we've been talking for that. And you just heard it differently and it resonated.
That's
So,
and hence the whole reason for this podcast, because that's exactly why I do what I do. Because sometimes it does. I'll have someone say something to me and be like, wow, yeah, I never thought about that. And they're like, yeah, you did. You say it every day. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. You're right. If I really think it down, break it down, but yes,
Yeah,
it's funny.
so I know I love it. So the crux of all attachment is that we all want connection, and connection creates safety and like livelihood to be alive. Because think about it, as children, as babies, we cannot be alive if we don't have connection. If you just think about it like that as like kind of the foundation of attachment. So secure attachment means that I have a sense of self, a secure sense of self. So of course I still want connection, but if there's a rupture, I still have my sense of self, and I believe that I'm still okay despite that person leaving. I'm still sad, right? Like, let's
Right.
say break up or there's a rupture. I'm not like standing there being like, yep, that's great, like awesome, right? But yeah, I'm still sad, and I still might grieve the breakup or grieve, the disconnect, but I know at my core I'm okay. So that's secure. And research shows that about 50% of the population is secure. That's according to research.
Give it
Not
another
research.
year
Yeah, exactly. So
or two.
I'm not a
Research
researcher.
will do it. It's crazy. I'm sure it's going like this.
Yeah. Especially with COVID. Yeah, exactly. So again, I'm not a researcher, but that's what the research says. Anxious attachment. Again, everybody, the goal is connection. Anxious attachment is when someone leaves, the sense is, oh, I'm not okay. Oh my gosh, right? And so then tendencies can be like clinginess, reaching out, wanting more. And so, like I said, a lot of people describe these individuals as really clingy, really anxious, really kind of going overboard. And so an example of this behavior might be calling someone multiple times, being very, very upset and dysregulated if someone leaves.
Okay.
Kind of thinking about anxious, right? Yeah, like I'm not okay if you're gone. So, and again, these are very broad.
Very simply, the simplest
I,
way to explain it,
yeah.
yes.
And not everybody presents in these exact ways. So just want to name that. Okay. And so then avoidant is another one of the insecure. And it's very misunderstood because a lot of people believe that they don't want connection, but that's actually not true. So avoidant individuals, when there's connection, they actually back away. And so their fear is they won't have independence. So what happens is people think like, you don't want connection, but that's actually not true. At the core, they want connection, but they fear their independence will be taken away if they have connection. So that's kind of the avoidant. And so avoidant individuals will, like an example might be, difficulty committing, or won't answer their phone as much, or kind of stuff like that, where they're more distant, kind of having more distant behaviors.
So it's more about thinking that they will lose their independence versus thinking the fear of if they get attached, they will be left and hurt again.
Correct. Fear of abandonment.
Fear of abandonment, yes.
Yes, right. Exactly. And
So where would you fit into the spectrum? I'm just going to take one person that has been talking to me, and I know she listens to these. And
yeah.
so where would you fit in someone into the spectrum that is that person that grew up feeling very detached, like no connection at all? But they have this, I'm 100% independent and I don't need anybody, and that kind of, and so yes, they, have a loving marriage and all that stuff, but it's still that I don't need anybody, and if they leave me today, I'm cool.
That would be probably more of an avoidant, right? Because avoidant people can have relationships, right? Avoidant people aren't just like always single and never in connection, right? But it's that stance of like, I don't need someone, I'm going to be more independent. Yeah. And of course, that's just based on like one little vignette.
It's a little scenario. And, putting even just any of those things into perspective, then you have a whole nother dynamic of that relationship because you're like push and pull at the same time.
Correct. And that's a good point. So they call it the anxious avoidant trap. So typically, avoidant individuals and, or I want to say individuals with avoidant attachment, I apologize.
No, you're fine.
Individuals with avoidant attachment and individuals with anxious attachment typically bond and typically get into a relationship. And so they call that the anxious avoidant trap. And so what's difficult is that, those two attachment styles feed off of each other. So the person moves towards who's anxious, And the person then, well, I'm going to move away, who's avoidant.
Right.
Right. And then it's just like this push pull, because what it does, it validates their worst fear, is that if I'm in a relationship, for the anxious person, the other person's going to leave me. And if I'm in a relationship for the avoidant person, the other person is going to take away my independence.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's amazing. I mean, you see it all the time. You
Yeah.
see it absolutely all the time. And it's just one of the mysteries of life, right? So what do you, if you're out there and you're listening and you're like, wow, that's really, that is kind of me. That's my, I am, let's just say the anxious attachment person. Are there anything that you can think of off the bat? Like maybe just a couple little things like, oh, maybe I could start doing this to start, I don't want to say weaning myself, but working, being aware.
Can I answer that and then go back to the disorganized
Oh
attachment?
yeah, no, I'm sorry. I thought, I forgot. I forgot. No,
Okay.
finish your disorganized attachment. That was my bad.
No, it's okay. The reason I want to do that is because a lot of times it's ignored. Disorganized attachment. And disorganized attachment is very commonly, it's not diagnosed, these aren't diagnoses, but experience in individuals who've had a history of trauma. And so it's not usually talked about. It's usually ignored in literature. So disorganized attachment is kind of just how it sounds. It's disorganized. So sometimes there's anxiety, sometimes there's avoidance. It's kind of potentially disorganized. But at the core of it, there's fear. There's fear of connection. There's the desire for connection, but there's also fear. So there's this push-pull in the nervous system, in the attachment system for it. So there's a lot of distress when it comes to it, and that creates the disorganization.
Okay. So give us an example, if you could, a real life, like a situation.
For example, people who are like, I really want connection. I really want, it could be a friendship. It doesn't have to be, attachment doesn't have to be romantic, but so I really want to be, I want a friend. I want to whatever. So, we search that out, we search that out. And then once I get a friend, I'm like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? I can't be your friend. Like, you're going to hate me. Like, so I seek that out, but then I fear it. So, but then, but th so like, and then I retract, but then I'm like, I really want that. And then I retract. Right. So because there's this fear and there's this desire, and I don't know how to manage that internally.
So what are some, what would you suggest on that one? Because I think that's a lot of people.
I do too. Yeah, I agree.
Most of the
So,
people that I deal with are adult children of alcoholics, dysfunctional families. They're all over the place in their thinking, in their what they want versus what they had versus it's just a conglomerate of different thoughts, and I can see where people would be really all over the place in an attachment world, I guess you could say.
yeah, well, so I think the first and foremost thing is understanding, oh, this makes sense, right? Like, my behavior, even if I don't like it, right, it makes sense. And why does it make sense, right? Because it has kept me safe, right? Because the thing with adult children is, or anything that has happened with our families, is the people that hurt us are also the people that we went to for support.
Yes.
Right? So that's the fear, and that's the desire for connection. So, like, the same thing is happening in our attachment relationships as a child to as an adult. So, like, the nervous system, all it cares about is keeping us alive and safe.
Right.
So the first and foremost thing I like to help people understand is that your body is not doing this stuff to hurt you. You may not like it. That is something very different, and that's okay. We can grieve that our body, and these impulses are happening and we don't like them. But the goal is to keep us safe, and it actually has, because you're still alive. Right? So I think understanding that first and foremost and having compassion for yourself, like, hey, I've been through really tough situations. And so this is how my body has responded to those tough situations. So that's always the way I start.
And that's great because just having the self-compassion, like my body is feeling and doing exactly what it can be expected to do, knowing that as a child, it was just keeping. I mean, that's what your brain does too. Your brain and your body both, their one number one goal is to keep you safe.
Yeah.
So you develop whatever, and you know, like I said, all these things are amazing and they kept you very safe. They don't always serve you going forward.
Yeah. And so that's the thing too, right? It's like that was then and this is now, right? So helping yourself separate that was then. Okay. At that point, I needed these techniques. And sometimes now I might too. Am I still in those situations? Because sometimes we are, right? For maybe different reasons. It might be racism. It might be a work situation. The list goes on. But sometimes it's like, oh, I'm actually not. And so helping ourselves differentiate that was then and never ignoring or dismissing that, because that's part of a lot of our trauma is the dismissing of our situations and what is happening now, and being really clear about what's happening in the present moment, because a lot of it is implicit flashback where it's like our body is remembering what was happening then, even though we're present, we're like standing in 2024.
And it is, your body is so, it's unbelievable the things that it holds. I use the example of something that happened to me when I was a child, and it happened every day, same time of day, while I was listening, watching, my mother was watching this one TV show. And
Yeah.
literally 30 years later, that TV show came on in the background and I vomited.
I'm
And
sure.
it took me a minute, like, okay, what was that even, you know? So it was literally my body, it was so tense just hearing that, the sound, just that one little sense of
Yep.
the noise, that music. And that was when I use that as an example all the time of like a classic case of like PTSD that was so deeply stored that 35, or I guess it was 35 years, it would have been 35 or 40 years later. And it's like, whoa. It's
Yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. And like, that's where we know, like, that wasn't your mind. Like, you weren't saying to yourself, okay, you heard this music, go and vomit. Like,
No.
right. And that's why you know your body needs to be a part of this healing experience, because, you could talk about that all day, but it doesn't change it.
No.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of exercises if you do the somatic therapy and stuff that you can do to release these things. And I love it. Talk about just like one or two.
Yeah.
I know
Okay.
people are very through, like,
Yeah.
people love this.
Yeah. So I'll talk about one that I really enjoy doing. It's a boundary exercise, and I know that boundaries are big for a lot of people, especially with childhood experiences. It's good with attachment, stuff like that. So a lot of things with somatic work is slowing it down. Because what happens in trauma is it's too much, too fast, too soon, or not enough, because that's also neglect, right? So a lot of times individuals who've experienced trauma will do things really fast. So including myself, I'm a fast talker, a fast, well, I mean, it's just like everything's so fast. So I have to remind myself of this too. A lot of the work is slowing down. So there's an exercise. And I'm going to be honest, I wouldn't do this by yourself. So I just like to name that. So, as they say in a lot of things, like, don't try this at home,
Yeah, don't
kids.
try this at home. I do. I
Yeah,
sell
like,
essential oils and I get it. I'm like, okay, you can drink, or you can put oregano, you can put it in
yeah.
your food, but don't try this at home. Don't be drinking.
Right. I think there is something about doing it in a safe container with a professional. And there's steps to it, but so part of it is doing an exercise where your hands come here, and then slowly you move your hands out. And part of it is if I just did it really fast, right? Like nothing's gonna happen, right? Like we move our
Right.
hands like that all day, right? And so that's part of it. We have to slow it down and notice what happens in our nervous system. And part of my job as a practitioner is to track your nervous system. And I'll stop you as you're doing this activity, as I see maybe a shift, maybe as I see you pause, and I'll say, hey, what's happening inside? Right. So you may never get to your hands fully extended, right? Maybe your hands are here, but a lot of times we never got to say no. We never got to put up, quote, a fight when we really needed to,
Right.
right? So this exercise allows our body to do what we never got to do, instead of me just being like, and I'm not saying this is wrong. Like sometimes we really need to talk about times where we never got to say no. But
Right.
there's a difference between me talking about that and my body getting to experience that. And then we can even add us saying the word no, or us saying the word stop as we slowly do this. And there's been really profound effects, but it has to be slow. It has to be titrated. It has to be like contained. It can't just be like, stop. Like
Right.
nothing's gonna happen, right? Like, so that's one of the tool, like
I
the
like
tool.
that. That's a neat one. And I mean, there's you can and I agree too. I mean, because you can go on and go, oh, I'm going to download this list of 28 things to do or 15, but it's not the same. You need to, for one, it be explained why. Because if somebody says just put your arms out real slow like that and concentrate on what you're thinking, you're not even no like they're not they may not tell you this is the reason why. And this is so it definitely is good to have someone to work through this, whether it's a group or I know there's a lot of these somatic groups out there now that like meet and do all these things. And but it's definitely you need to know what you're doing. It's like everything else,
Yeah. Yeah.
so.
And part of it is there's sometimes not a why. Like we're getting curious. Like I don't know why some things happen. I might have a hypothesis, but everybody's nervous system, everybody's body is so different. And so if someone says they know 100% why this is going to happen or what's going to happen, I would run so far from that coach or that therapist or that practitioner because I can never tell you what your body is going to do.
No. And if you do the same exercises 3 days in a row, you're going to get a very different reaction 3 days in a row, which I think is really interesting. And I've had people go, well, I did this exercise and they taught me how to do this exercise. And then the second day, it didn't work because I didn't feel that. Well,
And
not
there's
what
no,
you were feeling.
and like a lot of my clients come to me and say, like, well, I'll say, I always say, like, would you be willing to try this with me? Or would you be willing to do this? And sometimes they're not. And they're scared that because they don't want to do it that day, that they're not getting the healing. And I always say sometimes the healing can be in the no, right? In the fact that you're not ready to do it. Like that is so profound. And so, then we can process the no, like what tells you inside that you don't want to do it, right? And like, so I think that there's this narrative that like this exercise is going to heal us, and that's just so not true. Like if you can listen to yourself and say like I'm not ready today, like that is healing, right? Instead of like overriding your impulse to say, well, because Sarah told me, or this, day three I'm supposed to do this,
Right.
like no, that is like not the purpose. Like, and there's no, you're not supposed to feel, there's no supposed to feel anything, right?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. There is no roadmap. There is no, if you do this, this is going to happen. Because when you're dealing, like you said, you're dealing with a nervous system. You're not dealing, and no two nervous systems are alike. So yeah, you just kind of have to see where it takes you. But that's awesome. I love that I love this whole conversation. I know we kind of were all over the place, but I it was I had some questions that I wanted to direct to some certain people, which is fun. But yeah, no, I appreciate it. This has been really cool. And
Yeah.
so tell us about your practice. I know you're in Michigan. So tell us a little bit more about that, or if you know, if you have any courses people can buy or anything like that.
Yeah, so we're an all virtual practice, group practice that I own in Michigan. So all of our therapists do somatic or EMDR work. Right now, no courses, but hopefully in the future. And we do have some free resources on our website. So even if you don't live in Michigan, because unfortunately, due to state licensure, we can only do therapy with individuals who live in Michigan. But we do have some free somatic resources on our website, so you can go check those out. And yeah, we, you know, like I said, we do somatic attachment, EMDR-based work.
Nice. Sounds fun. And I know a lot of people, I was looking for someone to come on and talk about EMDR because people always ask me, you know, that's another one. It's like, yeah,
Yeah.
I can do it, but I don't really practice it. You know, it's one of those things that I used in my own journey. So
Yeah.
it's very effective. I
Yeah.
love it. But yeah, so I want you to leave the people, my listeners, our listeners, with I guess one practical piece of something they can walk away with if they're questioning, if they know, like maybe somewhere to just get started or something.
Yeah. So I did say this earlier, but I'm going to repeat it because I think it's important to highlight it. When we're curious, we're not in a trauma response. Can I expand on that just a little
Yes, please. Because I
bit?
loved that statement when you said it, I was like, okay, I'm like, we're gonna write that one down.
Yeah. So a lot of times, trauma. The way trauma responses manifest is that we're very narrow-minded when we're experiencing trauma. So like we're factual, like this is the only way and there's no other thoughts. And we make meaning out of what happened. And that's okay, right? Like, you know, so for example, I'm just trying to think of an example really quick. So let's say I'm upset about something and I'm like, that means I'm a terrible person. Okay. And so can we get curious about me being upset? And maybe there's other possibilities that maybe I'm not a terrible person. Maybe it could mean X, Y, and Z. And so can I just get curious about that thought? Can I get curious about that feeling? Can I get curious about that sensation? Can I get curious about the person who flicked me off while I was driving? Right? Like, can I get like, and so, I mean, we can just expand it, but that is, I say all the time in my sessions, can we get curious about that? Because a lot of times we go to, there's one way to think about it, and that's it. And it's usually part of our trauma narrative. And so what happens, and I always love this, is like when my clients start to say, like, I'm gonna get curious about that, and they start to use that language, I'm like, we've done it, right? So if you can adopt that word, curiosity, and say, like, how can I get curious about this? And even if you realize, like, I don't know, like, I don't know how I can get curious, but even just asking yourself that question creates some space and creates less of a trauma response. Like, you're doing such great work.
Well, absolutely. Yes. And you figure when you are questioning things versus being in fight or flight, you take yourself out of that fight or flight because you're running like this when you're trying to, you know, just react. And when you have to be curious, you have to stop. You have to use a different part of your brain that's actually questioning and thinking. And so,
Right.
yeah, it immediately drops that level of just and self-compassion. There's nothing better than it. You know, just I say stop beating yourself up and just ask yourself why.
Yeah.
There's a
Yeah.
reason, and 100% of the reason it's not your fault. So just ask yourself why instead of getting mad at yourself.
Right. Right.
Absolutely. I absolutely love that. Sarah, thank you much so much for coming on. This was fun. I could talk to you all day, but I'm sure people are like, okay, it's been an hour, Tammy. You got an hour. No, I'm just kidding. But thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I enjoyed this too. I appreciate it.
Okay. And all of your links and everything, the free, whatever, the website, everything, so people can check out what you do, Instagram, whatever you have. I will drop it in the show notes for people to look at. And for everybody else out there, another story. And this one's about attachment. So kind of think about where you are and remember, it's not a bad thing. None of it is a bad thing. It just is. So have a blessed day, and we will see you next week. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. If this episode resonated with you, or you think someone else could benefit from what you heard, why not share it with someone you care about? Let's heal from our past and take back control of our lives together. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to www.tammyvincent.com for a free chapter of my book, Surviving Alcoholic Parents. While you're there, be sure to catch my invigorating seminar, Awakening Your Authentic Self. Together, we will rewrite our stories and turn trials into triumphant smiles. Until next time, keep embracing your strength, keep being you, and know that you are more than enough. You are way more than enough right here, right now.